actually sells, oh, it just said 1201, so. Well, it started a minute late with the land action at the Omni on Sunday night. I will push the little button and not.
You know what I think
of
what Steve said, which is that, you know, this case isn't just like us, criminal defense right now isn't just about preventing us from going to jail or having criminal records. It's about fighting the criminalization squadron and something that really came out of the pain for me in the document question that thinking about the power that you take. If you go to the bargaining table and you don't have, as the gentleman in the last post said, the ability to enforce your demands and make what you want real, then your power. Now, something that will hold in on the document is the barn bill. There was a moment in that film where they were deciding whether to abandon camp and then go to the negotiating table, and they said, fuck that. Like, of course they want us to abandon camp, because then we will have given up the only reason why they're even talking to us, and that they won't actually have to listen to us at the negotiating table. It's really interesting to me how elastic the law is and how much it really depends on the populist will backing it up. And I hope in our fight to ensure that direct action, especially this kind, because that's what our case is about, I'm hoping that in fighting to ensure that this stays legal, we can grow this movement and really get the word out and let people know what their options are. Great new opportunities for everyone. I'm also really glad that this is kind of like a gathering of our closest friends, because I can say it's totally amazing that Buck is back, and that's the chance to come back and report.
I don't know if anyone has the background of what's going on with us, but we pursued We tried to attain title to a house in record possession by occupying it, because there's a law in the United States, and it differs from state to state, the specifics of it, that says that if you live somewhere, if you occupy a space or a property for a certain period of time, then you can attain ownership of it. And that's what we are trying to do, and that codified in this country. And but the owner of record found out about our presence and had personal connections to the DA's office, which then came after us and is criminally prosecuting us for something that, I mean, really, is there a lot of different other ways to go, but if the owner of record wanted to, you know, fully restore the title of her house, then she would have to pursue a civil lawsuit, and she doesn't have to do that now. Instead, we are caught in a political prosecution, because there's that aspect of the store owner having familial connections with DA's office, but then that was also an opportunity for the DA to take a really hard blow to a movement. So that's a part of it also. I mean, that's all tied together. And that's awful, because we're trying to make housing accessible to people that aren't part of, that don't already have, you know, that aren't already part of the property class, or people who ever have, like, aspects of attaining that. I never have, never thought once in my life that I would own a house. My parents never owned a house. That, you know, like, but that should be the only way that you, I know, as I mentioned, it's very unstable in a lot of ways, and people should be able to live somewhere and not, like, constantly worry about where they might have to go next. It's really draining. I've moved 7 times in the past 2 years, and that's like nothing compared to some people.
know, and it's really hard to try to, you know, figure out what you're going to do with your life and what you're going to, like, dedicate yourself to, what you're really going to, like, put your, like, the full extent of your energy into.
And what I had planned was that piano solo from Southern Man, but I can't get to that without running through Bill Clinton's lies about CIA drug trafficking in Mena, Arkansas, which I was going to juxtapose with that piano solo, but right now I've got iTunes queued up with this. Am I recording? I'll just assume so.
On the game in Syria and prop up those so-called moderate rebels. There are no moderate rebels, of course, in Syria. There are Al-Qaeda and ISIS militants, terrorists who have been beheading people, eviscerating people, absolutely creating chaos and genocide right across the region. And this does not serve the Syrian people or anyone other than the Western corporate elites. And their geopolitical interests.
For people on National Public Radio reminded us that, well, it's quite possible that out of weakness, ISIS weakness could force them to say, well, maybe we can't defend Mosul sometime in the next several months, but maybe they'll say, well, if we can't do that, then at least we should be able to have terror offensives elsewhere in the world. So check that. You can listen to that in the archive, right, on National Public Radio. But, of course, that then raises this very interesting question. For those of us who are in the know, and that includes our list here, you know that Erdogan is the de facto commander of ISIS. In other words, the true caliph, not the pretend caliph that you see, not al-Baghdadi and his farnetications, right, and his Rolex watch, but Erdogan is the true caliph. In other words, ISIS is a kind of an irregular force that he deploys towards Syria, but also elsewhere he can and does, in order to promote this idea of the new Ottoman Empire or the new Erdogan Empire. Maybe it's going to be that. So not Azmin, but Erdogan is going to be the figurehead of this entire thing through all eternity. So Erdogan needs to launch some things in those directions, and we've heard all this, but so does Trump. Again, those Quinnipiac polls of the past week, and you know the ones I mean, that showed Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania practically neck and neck with Trump ahead in Ohio, I think it was. Those are shocking, but they are not necessarily conclusive. In other words, it's a very long time, and the methodology is a little bit strange. So therefore, these may not be reliable. By the way, anytime you see a Rasmussen poll, you can forget it, because Rasmussen is simply an arm of the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. Pure Republicans, right? Republican provocateurs. So don't believe a Rasmussen poll. But still, I'm saying Trump would be crazy, and above all, Trump's backers, as we'll see, Trump's backers, his commanders, his handlers, the people above and behind Trump, would be crazy to rely on something like the Rasmussen or the Quinnipiac at this early date. So therefore, as we've been arguing here now for some weeks, since the beginning of April, so over a period of about 6 weeks, give or take, we have been calling attention to the fact of this October surprise. And you'll recall that the October surprise is a terror event on the scale at least of Paris or Brussels, and it has to occur sometime in the September to October framework, right, taking into account early voting and other changes in the internal mechanics of U.S. elections. There's a grave danger. because we have two ambitious dictatorial demagogues who would benefit, right? And when you look at terror events, first question you want to ask is cui bono, cui prodest, who benefits? The full Latin saying is cui prodest scelus is fecit. The one who benefits from the crime is the one who committed it, at least as a strong suspicion. So
what expect France to do now, in the light not only of
this, right?
Friday's terrorism, but 10 months on from Charlie Hebdo? It's not going to ease up on what it's doing, is it?
No. Much depends on how the French public will react. We are being bombarded now with a media propaganda campaign. It's just non-stop talk, where we're told not to go out in the street. We're supposed to be fearful and keep quiet and so on. I think there is going to be a campaign against dissidents in France. They're very worried about the new media that has emerged in recent years, and they are very worried about the alternative media. So I think there you will see, we saw this actually after the attacks in January, you will see a conflation of terrorism and dissidents. So one of the tools which the mass media uses to discredit any kind of rational questioning of the established order, and particularly the war on terrorism, is to deride those who would question the war on terrorism as conspiracy theorists.
All the way to November. I don't think that you can say, well, I'll come back from the beach in September and then we'll worry about it. No, 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 no. So, there we have it. So once again, we need more people. If you know somebody who is influential, somebody with a program, right? Somebody who can put something, European newspapers could do great yeoman service now, right? Let somebody in Europe come forward with this, right? That's another way to do it. Especially during the summer when things slow down, you can often get stories covered that are not generally top priority for these papers. So you get the.
So there's also IndieBay, sfindiebay.org, I think, or something like that. And if you go click Anti-War East Bay Audio, you'll find all my mouse reports lining up together. And I haven't found that one yet, but we'll get to it. In the meantime,
sir, the Republicans are trying to blame you for the existence of a small air base at Mena, Arkansas. This base was set up by George Bush and Oliver North and the CIA to help the Iran-Contras, and they brought in plane load after plane load of cocaine there for sale in the United States. And then they took the money and bought weapons and took them back to the Contras, all of which was illegal, as you know, under the Boland Act. But tell me, did they tell you that this had to be in existence because of national security?
Well, let me answer the question. No, they didn't tell me anything about it.
And then let me contradict myself, saying that we had zero involvement. At the same time, Mr. Bell is insisting $25,000 went to Prosecutor Black, who says he could not conduct an investigation because he did not get the $25,000 that Mr. Bell contradicts himself about right here in Southern Columbia. Because if you're from Canada, this is U.S. a-holes. We'll be right back. Southern man is south of the Canadian border. So, that's...
It came down like a house of cards. There was, appeared to me to be a series of explosions, both on the top level of the building and on the ground.
Okay, now let's go back to the land action. I've used up all my little clips and now I'm ready to go with the one with Bill Clinton. After I mention him, there's a defendant in the anti-drug war class action lawsuit. And we need to get a similar class action lawsuit because it's the same gang pulling the same dirty tricks here.
Seems natural to plan a class action countersuit. There's actually, I have never heard anything like this, but I mean, you could have a class action among the four of you. So, yeah, because it's so out of bounds that, you know, I mean, there could be other class actions in general, but your specific case is begging for that DA to get drugged before a judge to answer for her atrocity in the law. I mean, the right to, what, non-violently redistribute the wealth is the alternative to violent redistribution, and if you make it impossible, you make the other inevitable. So, you know, if the powers that be have any sense, they'll see this countersuit coming. We had a class action lawsuit against Bill Clinton, Pete Wilson, and all the cops and judges that busted us. It was the anti-drug war class action lawsuit. It was handed to Z. Lowell Jensen, the biggest narco terrorist on the bench. He called a short notice hearing and didn't give anybody notice.
They didn't say anything to me about it. The airport in question and all the events in question were the subject of state and federal inquiries. It was primarily... state really had next to nothing to do with it. The local prosecutor did conduct an investigation based on what was within the jurisdiction of state law. The rest of it was under the jurisdiction of the United States attorneys who were appointed successively by previous administrations. We had nothing, zero, to do with it, and everybody who's ever looked into it knows that.
Polk County Prosecutor Charles Blake, the man who initially attempted to investigate the MENA, Arkansas criminal activities, would surely take exception to Mr. Clinton's assertion that, quote, the local prosecutor did conduct an investigation based on what was within the jurisdiction of the state law, end quote. In fact, it was Blake who went directly to then-Governor Clinton to seek funding for his investigation, seeing as how rural Polk County lacked the financial resources to deal with the CIA.
When it became apparent that nothing was going to be done on the federal level, that's when I began more actively pursuing it.
Prosecutor Black, a Clinton supporter, met with the governor and handed him a letter requesting money for a state grand jury on MENA.
His response to me was that he would get a man, something to the effect that he would get a man on it and would get word back to me. And I never heard back.
Years later, Clinton said he offered $25,000 to Prosecutor Black's boss to fund a grand jury. But Charles Black and his boss claimed they never heard about any offer of money from Governor Clinton.
I believe Bill Clinton's an honest, respectable man.
We'll be right back.
pass around that Sherman, because, well, let me just get back to the hearing this Friday. Yeah, you don't got to go all the way to Stone Mountain, Georgia to find that kind of shit. We got 8 years for following the rules, okay? Now,
I threw it out. So, as soon as one of us, any of the 50 of us, get busted again, we were going to try to get together another anti-drug war class action lawsuit. But along the same lines, this group should be thinking about going after DA O'Malley. Because on the Zim blockade, there was some awful shenanigans.
That's one obvious motive in all this. On that subject, let me go back to last month's...
Can of water for the Holy Land.
Port blockade, because...
We're talking about the Malaysian shootdown with Raymond Governor Bates. This is me sitting in a road.
Bouncing around to find it. Aha! This is it. Okay, it was no.
I am told that is no longer the peaceably assembly by this gentleman over here. You're obviously doing your job.
Today I'm walking back and forth for half an hour before
you walking back and forth. You can arrest me right now, right here.
Okay.
On that basis.
Okay. Well, you want to come over the sidewalk here? You have the option to stay on the sidewalk.
If I am under arrest, then let's make it obvious, okay? I wouldn't want you to commit a First Amendment violation by arresting me for walking back and forth. And I think there's witnesses. I know, and then everybody will say they came and went, no trouble, business as usual. They can take me away, but not everybody, probably.
I hope not.
At 15 after they announced the boat was still here on Cape of Bay. Yeah, so.
Tell me more.
Oh, good. Craig Allen Getty.
Craig Allen Getty.
So that's what you have to look for on the... Well, actually, I don't want anybody to go because they never bring charges. And I'll probably call and won't even go myself. But I have a October 20th court date, Department 107, 661 Washington Street, 9 o'clock. So... That was from my port blockade arrest on Monday, the 18th. And I wrote that up on Indie Bay and I actually posted that mouse report. But let's see. Oh, yeah. So the cannon fodder for the Holy Land. Let me just go back to the Ukraine for a bit.
So I think it was probably a stupid mistake. It should never have happened. But I do not rule out the more, the more damning scenario, which says
now,
that the United States...
Now, in this episode of the MS Bad News Horror Story, we have our...
Downing a plane like this.
Call it
Erdogan
offering Barzani his own little apartheid auxiliary, as if the Kurds can... Well, it was just a couple of days ago, I hit it on the road, looking for 48th and Shattuck, and not to freeload, but to get the land action update, and there's going to be a hearing on Friday, and... we are going to be stuck in Oaktown because I believe that's where the DA's office is, so that's okay to be stuck in Westo until Friday. But and then there's going to be the, this. Here we go. Play Sesame.
Judge Hendrickson jacked it into a misdemeanor after it had been the Superior Court had knocked it down to a infraction and like quintuple the fine, and so I tried to make a criminal complaint because she falsified the record before everybody in court, and DA O'Malley's personnel just refused to hear it. So that's pretty far removed, but there's plenty of the Alan Bluford murder, you know, all the East Bay cop killings, and Felton Henderson is looking over this whole area, and I keep thinking, okay, how do I get before Judge Felton Henderson with some of these other issues? But your specific case is wide open for a class action countersuit, and is any of that, you'd have to kind of get out from under the heat first.
Well, we would be, in this case, we'll talk about what happened with Banana House. The prosecution happened, I filed a civil rights lawsuit, not a class action, which would be actually more appropriate, applicable to this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, the way it's set up is before you can have a complaint for civil rights violations, you have to get your case thrown out. Because if you get convicted, then all the actions that took place up to your conviction are considered to be not violating your civil rights. So we have to win the case for... ...more in with the housing encampment, because a class action, you can't really do a class action with four people generally. You have to have, it has to be a multitude of suits, which means you have to have so many, I mean, maybe four, but I think you need to, like, have, you know, 12 to 100 to 10,000 to a million people, because they want class action is to keep all the suits in one channel, and so I don't know if it would be applicable, but they're considering that with the removal of the encampments in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, where it would be applicable.
Oh, right, the Mayor Lee, Craig Sewer.
Any more questions?
Land action. We are actually an organization that exists. It's not just about this conviction, this prosecution, this defense. Before this was happening, we were working on our micro farm campaign, and we actually had been making headway. We've been getting some movement with the city and also the county. The county wants us to give them a proposal for micro farms. The city has been asking us about tiny homes. But all of this work is being slowed down because we're using this defense. So we do need people to come in and help out. People that are interested in tiny homes, people that are interested in urban agriculture, people that are interested in squatting, and just social equity in general. If people want to help and come to our meetings, we're having Monday meetings, right?
Sure.
So if people want to help and help us organize, we need to reach out to our allies, bring them in. We're working with our attorney, Walter Riley, who's, we're building an alliance to address like the housing crisis right now. And we also need folks that can help us to set up meetings with county and city officials, do proposals for projects with the county and the city, and also do grant writing and do stuff that we would do to make this, like, our work actually move forward, because right now it's like grinding to a really torturous slow motion, because the few people in Land Action that have been working on this that aren't being prosecuted are getting saddled with a huge amount of work. So if people want to like come in and like participate, we do need help with these projects. And I think these projects are really important. It would be a shame that if we put all of our resources into this defense and all of the work that we've done to like to make the relationships with the city and the county for tiny homes and micro apartments, if all of that just like got sidelined, that would really suck. So yeah, just sign up and give us your phone number, and also reach out to us individually, because we need to bring people in, because we need to widen the circle of people involved in climate action.
I also, real quick, want to plug this new organization that we say we had earlier, is the Northern California Housing Union, and there's some flyers on the second for those people just coming in this way. So they have a meeting, and it's just the second Saturday of every month at IT Longo, and they just started organizing. They're still in this like kind of ground phase of trying to gather new members, but I really agree with their bullet points, which is kind of like their political ideal. And you mentioned Walter Riley and this like housing coalition, housing rights coalition, that is, I think, still also getting on its feet. But it's a group of organizations that have been doing work in Oakland already, like Cabo Vista and Land Action as part of that coalition. And so, like, what I see personally, I see lots of really amazing people and lots of really amazing organizations all recognizing that we're in a crisis, and that it's us, the people on the ground, that are going to do something about it to, you know, make it better for the people that are on the ground. And the thing that we're lacking, or that we just haven't gotten to yet, I don't want to say lacking, the thing that, like, we're moving towards is actually collaborating and creating this coalition, bringing everybody together. And, you know, sometimes that takes sitting in meetings. But you got to do that to meet people and, like, get that, you know, face-to-face recognition. Like, hey, I know you. We're in the same fight together. And, like, you know, you can have a barbecue and, like, talk and build some affinity. And then you can have this, like, real power to go out and trust each other. And you spend a lot of time debating what you're going to do, so you're really confident that what you're doing is what's right for the community. And all of that's the kind of thing that happens at meetings and or at barbecues. Anyhow, yeah, so even if you don't like going to meetings, you should. And I would recommend we have good meetings. They're kind of small, which generally makes them better. But we want them to be bigger, because a small meeting means you only have a few people to do the work. And while it might be harder to get through a big meeting because everybody has their own opinions that need to be voiced, it's a lot more to be fleshed out. Like, the more people, the more heads, and the more ideas you have, the more you have to work through your contradictions. But that's really like how you move forward. So I'm just going to call the planned action meeting, because it wasn't technically scheduled, but everybody seems to think that it is. So Monday, tomorrow, at 7 p.m., that's on me. Yeah, here, on me. It's like the first of many weekly planned action meetings. And if you have energy and capacity and passion to put towards this fight, please come.
Monday.
I am going to do everything in my power to be
able to help the community. This is recorded Sunday night.
June 11th, I can log in, and the time is on your print out over there. Because, yeah, we all really need to start working together, and I hope you all, like, go along with all your friends, like, a total nerd, and be like, hey, come to this meeting tomorrow.
stop holding you all hostage. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks for coming.
Oh yeah. You have a question. Sorry.
Yeah, we have a garden party on the 22nd at Coyote Bush, which is one of our projects. We have little horseshoe flyers over there so you can pick up the information. And it's a good opportunity to see one of our projects, you know, what they look like. Done a little house on it, and it's got like a new plant nursery. And we can talk about the legal situation there. It's a good learning situation for our new members. 1 week from today.
It feels like high drinks, but for all the leftovers, you make sure to get there if you haven't eaten yet, and you can get what you want, and if you haven't had some food, you can eat something.
Stephen DiCaprio, co-defendant with former BLR DJ Eggplant in Hilarity Burns. There's a great San Francisco Bay Guardian story by Shane Bauer, Iranian kidnapping fame, called Hilarity Burns. And sort of on that subject, we've got DJ Miles playing. I don't hear me, but oh, why don't I hear me? MP3. Oh, maybe it's not even plugged in. Well, I'm not gonna do it over the. I have an input. Never mind. I will spare you all of that because I have a lead into. Well, hold it. Let me go back to this. I think I was interrupting something.
We did everything we could. So they're able to convict us of conspiracy and trespass and fraudulent documentation and center the main charges against us. Then that means they can go after any squatter. This, what I consider to be a landless movement here, will be, you know, we won't have any kind of legal protection whatsoever. And that doesn't just affect squatters, like quote unquote squatters, that also affects guerrilla gardeners. That affects people who engage in direct action, because any type of land occupation, whether it's housing or food or political action, could be, you know, this is a precedent for people to be prosecuted and convicted of crimes, even if you're not really breaking any law. So.
So let me segue to. The next time I'm young.
Shopping cart sings on the cold morning pavement, searching for dreams and aluminum cans.
And since this is by Carol Denny, I got to read her article. And it's not queued up, Turtle Bird, but that's okay because many barriers to effective recycling programs in California is my short little thing I should get through before I run out of steam. By Carol Denny. If you bring salvaged materials to Alliance Recycling, you can sort your materials on the premises into bins provided. The recyclables are then weighed and you are paid in cash. For many recyclers, it's that simple and quick. You might make 50 to 150 a day, depending on how much you bring, and that might be enough to live on, depending on how you live. Well, in my former life, before San Francisco doubled its rent on us of 6 years at least, I was getting about 10 bucks from the drunk roommate's alcoholism every time I ran out of money, and it helped diffuse my drama. Never mind. Nothing to do with Carol's story, perhaps. Although, let me say, this has everything to do with Dogpatch Redemption, a movie that the Speech Spirit, which I'm reading from, has co-produced and you can buy through the Speech Spirit vendors, like the one I just bought this from. Okay, now back to many barriers to effective recycling programs in California, and I could even go all the way up to the top, green versus gentrification, the disproportionate impact of gentrification on communities of color as home prices and rent skyrocket is undeniable. The poorest people in the Bay Area are disproportionately people of color, whether they're homeless or simply struggling. A cafe employee attempted to dissuade him from speaking to her. Bell is black, his wife is white. It happened to be his birthday, and a couple had breakfast there earlier that day. Bell famously initiated as much thoughtful community discussion over this incident as he could in hopes of helping inspire conversations about race, gentrification, and the assumptions we make about others as we go throughout our day. But no one in the Bay Area would seriously suggest we live in a world where these issues are passed. I'm jumping on to page 14, and it starts from page 7, so, but back to the shorter article. I'm sure I will run out of steam in the middle of that one. Many barriers to effective recycling programs, and at the end it says, in case I do run out of steam, she tells the story of a Santa Cruz resident's grandson who took his bottle and can collection to Whole Foods and was told that they don't accept recycled materials. Can I quote you, he asked, at which point they suddenly changed their minds because the state law requires there to be a recycling center every so far, and if there's not, it requires the store that sells this junk to redeem it. And so you see how the system works. They will screw us if they can. You might make 50 to 150 a day, depending on how blah, blah, blah. A fully loaded cart with its weight evenly distributed is not just heavy, it is wide. The drivers can be as impatient with its course through the streets as neighbors can be with its clattering sound. Oh yeah, so there's talk about getting dedicated carts that will have like rubber wheels for the tall quieter. Curbside recycling, such as is provided in Berkeley and San Francisco, only diverts a small fraction of recyclable waste from the waste stream. Neighborhood recyclers go places where curbside services won't go and collect materials no one else is organized to retrieve. One example of the controversies that can surround recycling is the Oakland City Council's fresh contract with waste management, which didn't seem contentious when they signed it. It was an ambitious effort to incorporate composting and recycling, but many Oakland residents were furious to find service fees jump, sometimes tripling between fee increases and ancillary costs, such as a $931 charge to push a large dumpster 100 feet to a curb. So the use of a forklift over here in West Stowe to clean up a park. As say, a couch had been dumped in the middle of everywhere. And so they're using this trumped up bullshit against the recycler over in West Oakland. And that's a big part of this story by Carol is actually singing Eli Yates, who's not around with us anymore to sing it himself.
I catch my reflection in the shuttered up windows and wonder how I ever got as old as I am. The street has no markers, just a river of cars. can't for the life of me understand how I ended up here. But the next time I'm young, I'll do it all different. I'll make the right moves and I'll make the right plans. I'll have me a family and a good job to go to, a house with a driveway where I park the sedan. And I'll never be poor, I'll never go hungry, I'll wear fancy clothes out on my promenade. And I'll sit at the table just as long as I want to, I'll shut my own door at the end of the day. Somewhere in a pocket of this greasy old backpack is a magazine picture of an old country town, where there isn't much concrete, lots of good grass to walk on, bushels of children running around. Folks look so friendly, all smiling and waving, covered in sunshine as they walk to the fair. As darkness crawls over me down in the alley, I wonder if someday I can maybe live there. But the next time I'm young, I'll do it all different, make the right moves and I'll make the right plans. I'll have me a family and a good job to go to, a house with a driveway where I park the sedan. And I'll never be poor, I'll never go hungry, I'll wear fancy clothes out on my promenade. And I'll sit at the table just as long as I want to, I'll shut my own door at the end.
Up decorations right around holiday time, then hands out lots of citations for people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the sidewalk, you cannot lean on the wall, you cannot stand in the doorway, cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's gotten colder. Maybe the people have changed. This town's concerned about hunger. If it's an ocean away, people don't mean to be heartless, but they don't know what to do. People don't mean to be homeless and such a bother to you. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's got the answer. Maybe they'll all go away if we just make it illegal to have no place you can stay. If we just make it illegal to be disabled or poor, maybe we finally won't have to think about them anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the
that's the downside of us being convicted. But the stakes are really high for the district attorney as well, because if the district attorney loses this case, then they will then have to reevaluate their position, and it could set a really amazing precedent that could allow us to open up opportunities for people to access land and housing for those purposes, gardening, direct action, housing, and any other use that we can think of that could see a social benefit. Because if the district attorney loses in this case, they're going to be a lot more hesitant to bring other cases. And also, if they go after the four of us in the future for the same thing, then they're going to be, then this case would actually, you know, it could be double jeopardy, we could call it double jeopardy and discuss and bring this case back into it, which would make it difficult for them to go after us, which would allow land action to continue being what we set ourselves up to be, which is to be a resource like in Amsterdam, where people can work with us if they want to and occupy properties in the name of land action, so that when police come or anything else, like, you could just say, I'm a property manager for land action, and just like make people go away. And so the stakes are really high, and we're really at a crossroads, and I want to thank you guys for your support.
In every case, it seems like there were laws that were in place to protect people's rights, but the landless people, there were city laws and the state laws and the constitution that protected the rights of the people who were more disadvantaged. But then more often than not, it seems like the authority would come in and violate those people's rights. And that, I guess that seems to be kind of ubiquitous around the world, maybe, that no matter where you go, maybe you have rights, but if you don't have the ability, usually the money, the political power to really assert them, then they generally get trampled on by the powers that be. And the way that you prevent yourself from being trampled upon is by having lots of your comrades very close to hand. So that was something that I noticed that kind of seemed to tie all of these struggles together, because it seems like it's really interesting. Like, yeah, let's recognize like how many people in this room are white, have skin privilege. And then you go to a place like Amsterdam, well, everybody's white there. Well, it's like a white country. And you go to Brazil, everybody's like, well, Portuguese, who were actually colonizers initially, and the indigenous peoples as well. And then you come to America, where like we're supposed to be this big melting pot, where you just have people of all views and all class and all race, and you do have that, and then it's interesting. Like, Kang did have a point. Like, if you look at the movie Shelter, most of the people in that movie were white, and had white skin. And I think that's largely because there is, like, a real fear of fucking political aggression and police brutality. Like, that's really fucking real. And most people in this country are white. And I don't know if it's like a human condition or if it's a societal condition, but when you see somebody that's different from you, it seems like it's our go-to reaction to fear. And I couldn't want to believe myself that that's something that like our society and culture is doing, but that's not something that's like ingrained in us as humans, that's something that is circumstantially created. And that if it's circumstantially created, it's something that we can all work together to break down. And I think that's really important for this movement, is that we make it a really integrated movement, and we open spaces, and we open a dialogue, and we support. I think it's really important that we acknowledge our privilege, we acknowledge where we come from, and that if you have privilege,
don't deny that privilege. Don't secure that privilege. Acknowledge that you have that privilege and fucking use it to help people who don't have privilege. And I think that's something that we all need to learn about a lot more. Like myself and everybody probably here in this room. And yeah, that's what it is. And in that, hi, I'm Kelly. I was born in Northern California. I also spent a good period of my life in Southeast Missouri. I've spent a lot of my early childhood in a working class family, and I went home to Missouri. I lived in pretty abject poverty and homeless as a child, and I was a child. And I have immense educational privilege, and I did that by borrowing money from the government and working myself. And it took me 12 years to graduate and go to bachelor's degree. And I currently don't use my degree because I also have a brain injury, which makes it really difficult for me to work with computers, and possibly that's what my degree. And I think what most degrees nowadays are great for is like to get a job in front of the computer. And like I have no emotional desire to do that, and I also have a physical disability that makes it really physically painful for me to do that. So I'm poor. And I could work a lot more. But I choose to work as little as possible at paying jobs to dedicate my life to like social organizing and trying to fight the injustices that I see. And I think it's really important that that's what I do. I mean, it's really important for the rest of us try to do that. And but you know, like if you have the ability to go out and you have like the mental fortitude to like sit at a job that's close to your soul and make a lot of money, but you really think about doing that also. Because there's a lot of us that can't, and we could really use your money and your ability to make it.
Okay, that was the Land Action, and this is the Land Action. It will be at Renee Davidson Courthouse, Department 10, which is 1225 Fallon Street, Oakland, California, May 20th. That's this Friday, I'm pretty sure. Today's the 17th, 18th Wednesday, 19th Thursday, Friday the 20th, 6th. At 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., 1225 Fallon, this is where the first PAM narco terror is coming down. Of course, signing off on not wanting to know, or, of course, they already, not needing to know, we should say, what we smoked some coke on the way down to ambush him meant. So they could let the getaway driver go and run around for a year before the Chauncey Bailey Project tracked it down and poor Maggie. And then, that's too much to get into, but that's all going down. Remember, the previous Tom Orloff and Chief Tucker and Derwin Longmire did not ask or want to know what he smoked some coke on the way down to ambush him, but not to be surprised.
Shot himself in the head.
Ken was hardy, but way back on the way to the beginning, I don't know how I lost my place, because I did this like 60 times to get to the first recording way back when,
1963.
Okay.
We uncovered a lot of evidence that proved that there was a conspiracy. I think the biggest thing was this videotape. Now, the Chronicle reported on the videotape in November of 07 that it existed, that Yusuf Bey the Fourth was bragging on it, that Yusuf Bey the Fourth was referring to, you know, boy, you know, if we get out of jail, the city council, people are going to be scared because of what happened to Dude.
Can we hear it in your voice?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I was there from 8 o'clock this morning with the black leadership that attempted to go see the district attorney. I saw firsthand how you saw people who are well known all around the country and respected and loved in the city who people represent a large body of people, not just a small body, because it came from churches, you know, from the Nation of Islam down to Baptist churches, you name it, and had to literally negotiate to have a sit down with the district attorney. I mean, he came out and he was like, "Yeah, I'll just talk to one of y'all," and it was like, "No, you're going to talk to all of us," and it became this back and forth.
Into which DJ Mouse is going to jump with my filed October 24th, 1988, in the Municipal Court of Mount Diablo Judicial District in and for the County of Contra Costa, People of the State of California versus Greg Getty, defendant, notice of motion. To the above entitled court and the district attorney, please take notice that at November 4th readiness conference, defendant Greg Getty will move the court for the following motions. Motion to dismiss. Since an evaluation of the legality of defendant's actions under section 692-694 California Penal Code, lawful restraint to commission of a public offense, requires examination of the illegality of the actions of federal officials in violation of Section 1116, 1117 of the Federal Criminal Code, the public offense, which examination previous local courts have refused to make, this court should recognize that if it upholds the doctrine of sovereign immunity by refusing to recognize the commission of crimes by federal officials, it should also acknowledge that it lacks the jurisdiction necessary provide defendant a fair trial and should waive jurisdiction, in this case, in deference to federal jurisdiction. So that was October 24th, and it looks like clerk's docket and minutes, the, here we go, per court dismiss is circled. And that was Walter Rogers, judge. Thank you, Judge Rogers, for dismissing my charges. From, I guess that was when I chained myself in the way of the chain, at the end of September 1987, but, well... Okay, here we go. You know that old saying, third time's a charm. Well, this will be the third time that all of you have come out to show your immense support of the Land Action 4 and this huge grassroots housing rights movement. On May 20th at 9 a.m. in Department 10 of the Renee C. Davidson Courthouse, the Land Action 4 have been promised a full half day of the court's time, an entire courtroom to ourselves. This is really huge. Our legal defense team, with Tony Serra leading the charge, will present our motion to dismiss all charges. Having the entire courtroom to ourselves can be an immense boon, and we want to make sure that we pack the courtroom. That means that we really need every single one of you to be there. Each of you will have an extremely meaningful presence at this crucial legal crossroads. As this court case stands, it sets strong legal precedents around the use of adverse possession laws as a means to shelter. We need to show the court, the judge, and the rest of Oakland that our momentum won't be dragged down by the court's stalling tactics. Twice now, Land Action 4 have stood before the discerning eye of a judge with a huge show of community support. Twice now, the powers that be have told us that they didn't have time to listen to our plight. And finally, we've been promised by those powers that be that we will be heard. But promises from on high only get us so far. Some have said that our motion reads like a housing rights manifesto, and no doubt Tony Serra will orate it with such fire and passion with it as such with will orate it as such with fire and passion. So please join the Land Action for our legal defense team and this powerful community of people who care about the basic human rights of all folks to have shelter on May 20th at 9 a.m. Department 10 of the Renee C. Davidson Courthouse. In case you are just tuning into this Bay Area housing crisis drama, here's the full backstory as told by defendant Patrick Sue and Ren Hyde. Interview begins at minute 3:35:54. KPFA org player audio On April 8th, during the show, Living Room defendants Steve DiCaprio, attorneys Walter Riley and Dan Siegel talked about the Land Action Report case specifically and addressed the political and economic side of the housing crisis. So that was the April 4th Living Room. If you want to go back and do that, blah, blah, blah. I've got something here, do I? Oh yeah, U.S. of A. Holes. We know the mothers, the sisters, and brothers. We paid in red, we set them on food. Our rivers on red from blood we spill, from people we kill, and men we steal. Ain't no justice while criminals rule. Here in America, there's killers on food, and a house of bondage is for you.
From your cup, I won't remember you. No
asleep and dream your dreams. That's the best this world can offer you. This world's exactly what it seems. You may sleep and dream tonight, but you'll be dead someday. Everything you leave behind will all be swept away. Anything you think you did that mattered much at all, they'll think someone else did, or no one will recall. All of your affections might as well have gone unshared. All the hearts you thought you broke were easily repaired. Everything you cared about or managed to write down will be dust like any tombstone planted firmly in the ground. Go on to sleep, my little darling. Go to sleep and dream your dreams. So long is all they say.